Welcome to The Revenue Architects. I'm your host, Jeff Ignacio. In this podcast, we're going to bring incredible business athletes together. We'll explore how to build a go-to-market capability for businesses, no matter the size or shape. We'll remix content from a bunch of different places, bring in guests, deep dive into incredible topics. So with that in mind, I want to thank you for joining us. And now on to this episode of The Revenue Architects. Today, we have Sylvain Giuliani joining us today. Sylvain is currently the head of growth over at Census, where he helps data teams at fast-growing companies make more sense of their data and their technology stacks. He previously led the data and operations teams at Pusher for the past 5 years. In addition to his role at Census, he mentors startups through Growth Mentor, and he loves geeking out on data architecture and processes. And you can find him talking about data stacks in the various data communities that are out there. I'm also a big fan of Sylvain because he comes to the rescue whenever I ask questions in some of these micro communities around data, and he corrects me where I'm wrong. So with that, I want to welcome Sylvain. Thanks for coming on to the show.
Hey, yeah. Hi, everyone, and thank you for having me, Jeff. It's a pleasure to join the show.
So, you know, first, I'd love to get to a little know, you know, what you're doing over at Census and your background a little bit. I love talking about data in general and how it's used today. Often I've heard that data is the new oil, but how often can you drive a car with raw oil from the ground? I personally believe it's crude and needs to be refined. And so tell me about your background, Census, and, you know, how'd you get involved?
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on with your analogy, and actually that's something I see all the time. And actually there's kind of like the backstory of why I joined Census in the first place. So before Census, I was at Pusher. And data was like a very big thing for us. We were, you know, product-led growth, like thousands of new signups a day kind of situation, very small sales team. So it was like, how can we route the leads to the right people, understand our user, what our users are doing? And so this means data. And what we found out is like, we're collecting lots of data, but we were not doing anything with that data that could be useful or act on, except like pretty charts in like Looker, right? And so we spent a tremendous amount of time and money to try to operationalize that data to be able to increase like sales efficiency, you know, marketing campaigns and things like that. And I think, again, like the energy that you mentioned was super spot on this. So it's like, how do you get those kind of like raw event data and transform them to something useful? And for me, like that means like aggregating events, you know, to create like attributes, like for example, like number of events done in the next 30 days, creating like scoring models, like high count health scoring models. And that's what we did at Pusher. And after Pusher, I was like, hey, I want to do that full time. And I lucked out. I got intro to someone at Census. It was before they launched the company. I was like, wow, what you guys are doing is exactly all the pain point I had at Pusher, but now it's a product and I don't have to have a 5-people team to build that for me. Like, that sounds like a sweet product to get to market. And so, yeah, I joined Census to do just that and evangelize this way of using data to do better things with it. And so that's where I've been for the past 12 months, really.
That's interesting, yeah. Because when I started in sales in my career, I was told that you should just hit the phones. Here's a phone book, start dialing down, and it's dialing for dollars, which seemed weird to say. It's like, oh man, I'm just going to ram my head against the wall, call through all the A's, hopefully a couple of pages later, get to the B's, and then let's see how the numbers play out. And through the law of averages, you should be able to extrapolate through sheer effort how you're going to shake out and how much commission you're going to earn. What you're describing is completely different from that. It's actually taking that and adding steroids to it, maximizing it, and really blending all this data from different places together to get a stronger narrative. So so from Pusher to Census, you know, what's been the key difference and the key learnings from moving from your experience at Pusher over to Census? And tell me more about the problems you're trying to solve.
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of problems that we are solving at Census. And I think this is kind of like, you know, applicable for any kind of like data project when it comes to like commercial data. It's like once, you know, getting data to the right place. So cool, you know, the classic thing is like, yeah, you see that pretty chart in Looker that says like, hey, 20% of your you know, new signups fall off the funnel because, you know, they don't go to the next customer journey milestone or something like that. And the really interesting question is like, who are those 20% people? And what can I do with them, right? So how can I identify them and act on that data, right? So this is like already like a very interesting problem to say, okay, how do I get those users into my marketing email tool so I can, you know, put them into like nurturing campaign, product education campaign, or how can I send those customer to like customer audience on Facebook to help with like retargeting to try to pull them back into the funnel, right? And so these are kind of like data pipeline problem. But that brings to the other second issue, I would say, is like, cool, but like, what happens if you send the email to the wrong people? Or you add that lead to the wrong sales rep. Like, you know, you don't want to be outbounding to an existing customer, right? Like that makes you look like an idiot, like as an organization. So this is where like trust in data is like the second thing that is super important, especially when you start automating and taking action on data. And so for me, this is very much like something that most people need to think about. And that's something actually we had lots of issue at Pusher, and that's something I try to educate people at Census, our customer a lot. It's like, cool, this is your lead list. You know, if you take your phone book analogy, it's like, cool, this is all the A's. Like, let's join data from multiple sources, like, you know, from your existing Salesforce instance, for example, like to remove the one that already exists a customer, the one that maybe have pending activities, like so joining all of that data into one place to filter them out or enrich them, right? You know, people are like, yeah, we're just going to put Clearbit data or whatever data enrichment tool you do. But that helps you like also narrow it down to make sure you're pitching to the right people. And, you know, this gets you in like the ICP territory. So again, refining those kind of like lead list, if we take that example, and then again, putting that kind of like segment of user back into the right tool to take the right action on those customers account or whatever we're talking about here.
I think of a classic scenario, right? We outbound, let's just play an example. You know, I'm a sales rep for an SDR, and I'm outbounding to an account. And as I'm outbounding, I'm sending, you know, useful email content from my product marketing team. 3 days later, the prospect reads the email, goes, holy shit, this is really cool. Let me forward this to all my friends at the company. And sooner or later, you get these three or four leads hitting in drips over 3 or 4 days. And yet, you know, the admins and sales ops and marketing ops aren't routing it to the same SDR, to the same AE, and you get these bumper car scenarios. It reminds me of, there's an opportunity here, it sounds like, and, you know, there's an idea for all those entrepreneurs out there. Guided selling into the guided data journey, right? Almost guided data governance almost. You know, what do you think is the, you know, if you're a sales rep, a VP of sales or a CRO, you know, what's the very first thing? It feels overwhelming. Data is a scary thing. You'd rather just get on the phone and talk to prospects. You know, where should you start if you're a CRO on building a sophisticated tech stack? If we were to do like a crawl, walk, run, what would that look like?
Yeah, I love the crawl, run, walk, run analogy there. So yeah, like what I always say is like, you know, the first thing is like having like a very good end-to-end use case. Could be lead routing, could be like, you know, like a ABM to opportunity type of process. And then just make sure you like this kind of like small amount of data, but that you can really trust, that you can trust to kind of do the automation. Like you don't have to have data on everything and like trying to achieve like super high trust on that data. Like that will take you years and you'll probably never achieve your goals. Like, you know, the time to value will be too long. And reusing kind of like your, you know, crude oil analogies, like better have like small amount of data that is really well refined that you can use day to day and you can trust, and lots of data that is basically CRUD sitting in your Salesforce and nobody trusts that data. So typically what I do is like, cool, you know, you have leads coming in. Like, wouldn't it be nice if we just do like a very simple lead scoring based on like your, you know, product usage, like kind of like a PQL thing or maybe like firmographic use case, and just route them to the right person in your organization. Like that's usually like a very simple sales use case that you can implement in like within a month with the data. And, you know, at that point, like, cool, well, now we're starting to have this kind of like data flowing. Like, you know, what would be nice on top of that is like in Salesforce, bringing all the product usage data for your trial. So it's like, hey, you know, I'm trying to do this POC with like my account. Like, I don't want to have to go to like the company backend or like another BI tool to understand how they're using the product. I just want to log into Salesforce and being able to see, hey, these customers, they've created more document in my SaaS application, or whatever your SaaS application, like there's a growth weeks over weeks usage, or they invited someone else into the organization, right? Like all those kind of like very important like product journey milestone, and you have just started in Salesforce. So great, you give like this kind of visibility to your rep. The next step is like automating that data. Like, wouldn't it be nice if you're an account owner and you see, you know, you get an email notification saying, hey, this account that you have, like their usage is dropping week over week right now. Or maybe yeah, there's an admin on this account that the account got disabled. Like that usually means like the champion is leaving the company or something like that. As a CSM, let's get back in touch with that company to make sure like, you know, we create a new champion or understand what's going on, right? And again, this all of this kind of like small use case, you can layer them up. At the end of the journey, you have like a full-fledged, like, you know, refined data in the right tool, right? And you can take action on those data to increase the team productivity, really.
So I think it sounds like every business could create a long list and then prioritize what works for them. You brought up top of the funnel examples, and I think that makes a whole lot of sense. We haven't talked on this show about PQLs for the uninitiated. You know, what is a PQL? Where did it come from? And what kind of impact have you seen businesses use incorporating that kind of framework?
Yeah. So PQL stands for product qualified leads. So typically you'll see those things, those concepts in like SaaS businesses that are product-led growth. So i.e. lots of freemium usage, like where there's like either like a free plan to a pay plan or like a, you know, self-serve plan where people can pay $50. Typically it's going to be businesses that have tremendous inbound in terms of like new signups. So think about the Figmas of the world, the Notion, Envision, you know, like this type of company. And so the purpose of a PQL really is to find the needle in the haystack and route that golden lead to the sales team at the right time, right? Because you can't have a sales team that is capable of like managing 20,000, 50,000 new leads a month. Like, and also in this user, there's a lot of people who just don't want to talk to sales right now, like, you know, they're not ready. And so the idea is to use lots of product signals as a way to say, oh, okay, that person is ready. And so what those signal could be, you know, it could be product milestone. Hey, this person invited 5 people to the Figma organization, or they've been using the product for the past, you know, 10 weeks, for example, or like whatever milestone, and then started routing them to the sales team. And again, you can mix those product usage with like firmographics. So to give you an idea, for example, something that we work on with one of our customers here at Census is to, so you have like a score for like each users, and all of these users are basically weighted based on like the seniority on the company. So a junior like salesperson, you know, will be weighted at 10% their score, but like a VP of finance who's using the product will be weighted, you know, 80% or something like that. And so we roll up all of those scores at the team and account level, and then only at the account level scoring, we'll, you know, consider this like as a PQL, and then we'll route them to the right rep, again, based on who's like the champion in organization and the side of organization. So you can do a lot of very, very complicated things, but you can also start super small saying like, hey, when someone invites 5 people to your organization, like, you know, this is a PQL, let's get going.
I'm hearing some great things here. PQL doesn't necessarily mean that sales is going to be dead, right? As much as people on LinkedIn like to say X is dead because of Y coming in, it's a very clickbaity title.
Yes.
But it sounds like PQL is really a precursor or a way to augment the pipeline for the sales team.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm a sales rep, like I would love to work in an organization with PQL because, you know, it makes my life easier. Like, you know, you wake up, you look in Salesforce, you have a bunch of leads, and those people are usually very ready to buy. Like you catch them at the right time if the PQL model is done properly. And, you know, it increased the sales cycle, shorten the sales cycle, sorry. You know, so like I'm a sales rep, I'm very happy.
Yeah, it's interesting because you're not only getting these cold leads, you're getting leads who've already been inside of your system. They may not be experts in your product, but they've seen enough to say, okay, I see it can fit, or hey, I have some these myths in my head, it's not a fit, and you're not a sales rep, you're a product expert in a solution. Yes. A solution engineer almost. So
yes.
We talked about sales. You mentioned sales ops, near and dear to my heart. That's my background. I would love to hear from you, you know, the evolution of, you know, this whole go-to-market ops. We call it different things: revenue ops, sales ops, marketing ops, mm-hmm. ops, data ops, and the impact that it's had. I'd love to hear from you. You know, what are your thoughts on the function? Knowing that you've been on the sales floor and you've also had to live this data journey and you've had to wax and wane over the two, let's talk about ops.
Yeah, I mean, for me, ops like is having like a tremendous like reinventation, I guess, of the sales, or evolution like right now. I think if I have to break it down, like there was like 10 years ago, Ops was like Excel's jockey, right? It was like, hey, yeah, I'm Ops because I've crunched some numbers in Excel and then I import a CSV file, maybe in a CRM or something like that, you know. Very manual labor and Excel heavy. I would say it was also super reactive as a function. You know, like the classic example I always use is like a board meeting, like the ops person was like preparing the board pack, making sure the number looks good and all that stuff. But it was a very small subtest because again, data wasn't like accessible. It was like all data still later. By the time you finish the analysis, it's like already obsolete kind of thing. And so you get to a board meeting and you get out of the board meeting with like more question than answer. I think with the SaaS, cloud, Salesforce, like analytics, like, you know, tracking, we started to get your ops to a place where they, you could still be quite reactive, but you could have a lot of answers, question answered before the board meeting, and you could answer the question during a board meeting because you had like data at your fingertip, like because everything was nicely prepared. I think that was good. But I think right now, like what I see is like RevOps is a lot more like insight and being a lot more proactive. What I see from my experience, also talking to people like yourself, right, is like actually it's get closer to like an internal consultant type of work where it's like you're going to work hand in hand with like your business leader, sales, you know, VP sales, VP marketing, whatever function do you report into. And it's going to be like, hey, did you know that the customers who bought those kind of like add-ons, you know, have an increase in like retention, for example, like, you know, or did you know that this type of prospects convert a lot better if we do those kind of things, right? So if it's almost like pulling some kind of like skill set and knowledge from like data science world to the HubSpot and to be like prescriptive, giving insight to the business and ultimately, you know, owning a seat at the leadership table. Like 10 years ago, you would have never seen like a sales person in a like leadership meeting or even like a board meeting, right? Nowadays, you do have to see like the head of RevOps big part of this conversation because they bring value to this conversation. So all of that to me means like coming from like having more data available and data you can trust. So it's kind of like this joint of like data analysts with the operation people to create this like magical RevOps. And on that note, RevOps for me, you know, it's like I really like that idea of like central operation team that helps like create alignment between sales, marketing, support, CS, whatever, but functioning as a glue team, right? Like before people were like sales ops person report to the VP of sales, like, you know, don't collaborate really much with the marketing ops person or the marketing organization. And so you had the kind of like siloization, very little surface to do handover. Usually the handover surface was like shitty conversation, like MQL to SLA, SQL, conversion. And people like the marketing ops, like, yeah, I send you 100 leads. And the setup's like, no, you only send us 80 leads. Like you broke the SLA. And so it was not very collaborative. And so bringing everything into one roof, like makes everybody align. And so you can solve actually the good problems, the hard problems for the organization.
I like to think of RevOps as this function that brings strategy and execution together like peas in a pod, and P stands for process enablement, advisory, and systems. But the things that are really important and operate under what I call these FAST principles, focus, alignment, simplicity, and teamwork. When you're optimizing for mid-funnel metrics and you're celebrating while downstream you've lost, for example, hey, look, we've had generated all these leads. We've generated this pipeline, but it's the wrong type of pipeline with a low propensity to close. Well, no one's winning there. It's a win-loss scenario, which ends up to me being a loss-loss scenario. One thing you mentioned there, it reminds me of, you know, being a sports fan. If you watch TV, you have these random sports facts that pop up on the screen. Like, for example, first player in baseball history to wear green socks on a Tuesday afternoon and hit a home run in 70-degree weather. Well, there's some data analyst who's running a SQL query to figure that out and flash that up on the screen, which no one ever fact checks that because, you know, no one has the time or the access to the data to do that. I'd love to see RevOps truly earn the seat at the table to not also describe what they're saying, but also prescribe where I think we could go. From your experience, I know you've been working on this newsletter about RevOps. Tell me more about that and, you know, why you built it and who's your kind of core audience from it.
Yeah, no, I think it's pretty much what you described. Like, first of all, I love the PNFast. I will definitely steal that from you and sell it to other people going forward. So thank you for saying that. What you just mentioned, like, I think, yes, that type of like new audience, like people who either have experience like being in a bad sales up organization, right? Like they want to move to like, hey, I want to be more prescriptive. I want to be a seat at table. So there's definitely this movement of people that rallying around this RevOps like trend, I would say. And so this is definitely the type of people I'm trying to talk to as much as I can, just to learn from them also. But I think, I guess the one big question for me with RevOps that as a trend is that like the big buzzword, like, you know, like, is it going to be killed by like the vendors? Like, you know, I think about people like Clary, you know, they're like, yeah, we're the best RevOps person. It's like, cool story. Like you know, you're doing report here out of Salesforce data. Like, that's nice, but that's not really RevOps. Looka could be RevOps too, if that's the case. Right. So I hope that vendors are not going to kill that trend to the same way, you know, Growth Hacker was all the rage like probably 10 years ago. And it kind of like disappeared. So I hope RevOps is there to stay because I think it's really important to change the mentality inside the organization. I think a lot of people want to see that change happen, whether it's like they've been individual contributors and they want to see their voice heard. And ultimately, you know, as a career progression, it's like, as a sales person, like, what's your career progression? Like, you know, start Salesforce admin, you crunch some numbers, you do some commission plan, and what, like, you're a senior sales person, and what, like, I feel like it's kind of like sucks, really. And so I think hopefully RevOps, like, you know, and getting a seat at the table will help those smart people progress in their career.
It's interesting. Think about vendors creating categories and creating labels. So for example, lead scoring, lead grading, I don't even recall that was a thing over a decade ago. I'm sure there was, you know, ways to look at a lead and quickly surmise that bias towards it's going to close because I can pattern match mentally, but now we're able to collect a little bit more data points along a number of different attributes and really put scores together. Whether those scores are right or not is something that I continually battle internally. I'll come up with a lead score. Someone will go, well, why did you weight that 30%? I'm like, well,
yeah,
it felt good.
Yeah. I mean,
or I have a fitted model and I'm like, look, the fitted model suggests, and I'm like, okay, well, walk me through your methodology of how you created a sample, and, you know, round and round we go into trusting our method. I believe you should just have something in place and then refine over time. And from there, you'll learn something about yourself and your model.
It's super interesting. So it's something we just had a conversation with a customer where we helped them implement the scoring, and exactly the same thing happened, right? Like we presented the data team and ops team presented the new scoring model to the sales organization. And it's like, why should we trust this thing? Like, you know, how did you do it? Like, why did you weight this thing like that? Right, kind of question. And evaluating the scoring model is actually a very interesting problem to solve for. Like, you know, the best solution that we came up so far with is like A/B testing. So, you know, certain amount of leads will get the new scoring model, the certain amount of leads will get the old one, right? And then from time to time, line by line, you evaluate like, hey, all the leads that got scored on the new model were, you know, faster lead to close, like close higher, like, you know, whatever like this. But again, you need a ton of leads to, you know, make it statistically relevant. It's lots of work to do the analysis. And you're like, at that point, you're like, was scoring model even worth it in the first place? So hopefully we'll see more development in that space. But
yeah, the immediate thing that pops in my mind is cool math, but potentially mad science experiment. Oftentimes I wonder if we're just not spinning our wheels, but over time, there will be winners and losers in every specific industry. Those who bring lead scoring and grading, I think those who don't have it personally, I think you're losing in an arms race. So you have to have it. Now the question is, do you operate it right? And is that one of the primary contributing factors to your company's success? Or do you just win simply because you have the best product in the market? But I personally believe features start to commoditize over a couple of years. And you also get nibbled away from smaller competitors that verticalize. So I do think lead scoring and grading is super important piece at the top of the funnel.
Absolutely.
So I have this segment. It's called the Rorschach test. We've had a couple of folks who've recorded with me go through this. I'm going to say a couple of words, and I just want you to say the first thing that comes to your mind. Okay. So just let me know what, we don't have to go long-winded, just literally just first thing that comes to your mind. So personalization versus relevance.
Personalization.
B2B versus B2C.
B2B.
MQL, like real or not?
Not.
Ooh, okay.
Vaporware.
We'll double click on that maybe another time. Deal velocity.
Important.
Enterprise pricing.
I hate it.
SDRs and inbound.
Inbound, because I feel like it's better to automate and build process around.
Pipeline management.
Essential but boring.
And is cold calling dead?
Absolutely not. Sadly.
I agree with you. if you're a startup, no one knows your name. You have no brand recognition. You might as well start cold calling. Thank you for coming on the show. Where can our listeners find out more about you?
Yeah, so I mean, you can find me on LinkedIn. I post stuff there. So Sylvain Giuliani, I think I'm the only one with that name on LinkedIn, so it should be pretty straightforward to find me. Otherwise, I'm also on Twitter. My handle is copypasta with 2 A at the end. Hopefully, Jeff will put some link to those destinations. But also happy to just geek out about anything data ops related. So feel free to reach to me on either of those two platforms. Or send an email at sylvain@getsensus.com.
Well, Sylvain, thank you again and appreciate. We'll have to have you on the show again.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my pleasure. We'll love that.